Okay, Land Castle Acquisition versus Renaissance. Mr. Kohler.
May it please the court, my name is Michael Kohler and I have the pleasure of representing Renaissance Bank. We ceded 3 minutes of our time to the FDIC and we've reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal. This case is before the court on an interlocutory appeal. The question before the court is this: does Dench bar a claim or defense that the agent who signed the agreement purportedly lacked authority to do so? The answer
is a forgery.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
It'd been a forgery.
I don't think it would have. Well, if it were a forgery, it particularly would be a real defense, and potentially would render an agreement void.
How is that different?
Well, in this case, Your Honor, we have a situation where it's a lack of authority, mm-hmm. and there, when you look at a forgery,
lack of authority means, as I understand it, that it's not actually the person that the agreement purports to be between, right? You have a party of one side and the other, and it's not actually that party.
That's correct.
Which, to me, is a lot like a forgery. That's not the actual person either.
Well, Your Honor, I think this case is more like a fraudulent inducement type case. In this particular,
Supreme Court said is accepted from the doctrine, right?
A fraudulent inducement is accepted from the Dench,
okay.
Your Honor. And even if this were more akin, I believe, to a forgery case, I don't necessarily believe that renders the instrument void.
So you think that even if it were a forgery, that wouldn't be a defense?
No, Your Honor. The Supreme Court in Langley, in dicta, it talked about fraud in the factum, and it looked to the UCC to say that fraud in the factum was a void-type transaction. But the court didn't go on and explain why it believed that was, in fact, the case. It just cited to the Uniform Commercial Code. And if you dig into the Uniform Commercial Code, it is silent about whether or not fraud in the factum is a void-type transaction.
And under Georgia law, lack of authority is voidable rather than void, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. And so that's important because, you know, in this case, the only way you can determine whether the person who signed the instruments here is to look outside the bank's records. That's the only way you can determine that. But if you have to go outside the bank's records, you're allowed to do so. As you point out, there are very few exceptions under Georgia law that would render an instrument void.
Does it make a difference to the overall intent and meaning of this doctrine if, say, in Florida or Alabama, this type of instrument was void rather than voidable? Would you still have an argument that Dench Doom should apply?
I think you can still look to federal law, but I don't think they're, at least here, Your Honor, I don't think they're inconsistent with one another. I still think that when you talk about a lack of authority defense, which is what this case is, there's the Landcastle nor the district court cited to a single federal case or a single Georgia case that said a lack of authority defense renders the instrument void. They haven't put forth anything, and I would submit that if you just focused on, say, Georgia law, it is avoidable.
Seems to me that these go to, so if the defense goes to contract formation, that is, whether there is a contract in the first place, and forgery would be an example of that. The fact that the principal did not authorize an agent to act as an agent, lack of authority would be that. That those are the kinds of defenses that the Dench Doctrine would not apply to.
I disagree, Your Honor. I believe the original Dench case involved consideration, and that consideration.
It goes to the whether there was a side agreement, whether the agreement that was in the books of the failed bank, was in the records of the failed bank, were constituted the entire agreement, And the other party said, oh, well, we had this other agreement. That doesn't tell the whole story. And it's those aren't that other agreement, that side agreement was not in the records of the failed bank, right? And what Dench says is, no, you can't do that.
That's correct, Your Honor. But
that's different from whether you have an agreement in the first place.
Well, Your Honor, the only way you can determine whether or not you have an agreement in the first place is when the examiner comes in to Crescent Bank, they see an agreement. They see a facially valid hypothecation, a facially valid agreement.
They see more than that. They see a apparent authority. It's got the same name of the law firm. I mean, I know he's pledging the CD, but he's the partner in the law firm. You've got the hypothecation agreement. You've got the other two agreements he signed. The fact of the matter is we don't have a forgery in this case.
That's correct, Your
Honor. Okay, and the fact of the matter is we have every document there, I suggest, is a valid contract because it has apparent authority all over the face of it, even without the document showing he has so-called authority to deal with the bank accounts.
Exactly.
Right.
There is
a contract form. Now, maybe somebody can come in and say, well, it's voidable, but there is a contract formed here under apparent authority.
The law firm's an LLC, and the Georgia Assembly's made a determination that third parties, like a bank, should be able to rely on somebody's apparent authority.
Wait a minute. I want to make sure I understand your argument.
Yes, sir.
I thought your argument was that the Dench Doctrine prohibits a lack of authority defense. Now, it seemed to me that if you have apparent authority, that means there's not a lack of authority. That means there is apparent authority. I thought your argument was that the Dench Doctrine bars a lack of authority defense.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
So that's a separate question from whether there would be apparent authority, isn't it?
It is, Your Honor. But, you know, Dench requires, it prohibits somebody looking outside the bank's records. The only way in this case they could attack actual authority is by looking at the law firm's operating agreement and
the only thing we're here to decide, I thought, was whether the lack of authority argument is barred by the Dench Doctrine.
That's the issue
right.
before
and,
it
and
could
I,
be
and
the
and
district court could conclude that, in fact, there was authority because there was apparent authority. And that's a different issue. But that's not the issue before us, I thought.
Can't you make an alternative argument? If we don't agree with you that lack of authority is an exception to the Dench Doctrine, then here there was apparent authority, so that's still okay?
Well, that's certainly our alternative argument, but we don't get there because...
The lack of authority, the apparent authority is not to go to whether it's the lack of authority defense or not, it's to say why this is not like a forgery, okay? This is only to distinguish this type of transaction from a forgery transaction, the underlying transaction. The defense is purely lack of authority. I think that's the issue, whether that's an exception here when all the parent documents indicate there was authority. Can there be some side, I consider it like a side agreement. It's some kind of side non-disclosure or whatever you want to call it. To me, it's just like a verbal side agreement to do something else. Here it looks like it's a contract. It talks like a contract. It was everything. In fact, I want to make sure I have a couple of facts right, that the bank, this was pledged in 2009, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And so for a long time, the debt was being paid by the law firm, correct?
The borrower was Mr. Hardwick.
Excuse me. He paid, it was the law firm CD that was liquidated. He was paying this debt for a long time.
I don't remember when it became in default, Your Honor, but it was liquidated.
Well, it was not liquidated until 2014.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so that was only upon default by the debt.
That's correct, Your Honor. I believe it was declared in default, and it was liquidated in October of 2014. Contemporary notice was provided.
But I thought post bankruptcy or receivership, and your bank ended up with loan, I guess, for better words, that the debt still got paid some during that period of time.
Your Honor, I would have to go back and look.
I don't know.
I don't remember how much of that debt was paid by Mr. Hardwick until it was put in default.
This is a 1292B interlocutory appeal, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the petition for interlocutory review sought review on more than one question, as I understand it. But we granted review on only one question.
That's correct.
And the only question we granted review on was whether the Dutch doctrine bars a claim or defense that the agent who signed the agreement with the bank purportedly lacked the authority to do so.
That's correct.
Right? We did not grant review on a question about, for example, apparent authority.
You did not, Your Honor. And part of
don't have jurisdiction to decide that.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
We don't have jurisdiction, appellate jurisdiction, to decide anything other than the question presented.
I think the court can look at the district court's order denying the Renaissance Bank motion for summary judgment that this issue arose out of.
I thought this was limited review. This is interlocutory review only of the question presented.
Yes, Your Honor, and that question arises out of the district court's denial of the motion for summary judgment.
Got any law for that?
I'll look at that and supplement the record.
But the main issue is that your position is that the lack of authority is not an exception to the Dutch Doom Doctrine. That's the legal question. Really, that's all we need to decide.
That's correct,
all right. Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
You've saved 3 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Shabor.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Nicholas Shabor for the FDIC. So I want to begin on a few points where the court left off here. And specifically with the example of forgery. We think Dench supplies the answer here, the original Dench case, which is that there could be a narrow exception to the Dench doctrine where a party lends itself to an arrangement that could mislead bank examiners. So in the forgery example, if there's no party that has lent itself to an arrangement to mislead bank examiners, that's why forgery could constitute a narrow exception to the Dench doctrine. Here, by contrast,
because there's just not a contract at all, right? If it's a forgery, what it means that is not in fact an agreement, but with that person whose signature has been forged, isn't that right?
That's true as well, Your Honor.
I understand it might be different if the party whose signature was forged. And engaged in some kind of negligence that would make it permissible to hold them responsible. But if we're just talking straight up forgery, there's just not an agreement with that with that principal, right? Or forget about principal agency for a minute. That party did not sign it. That's a defense, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. Here, and here by contrast, there was a contract that was formed. There's no dispute.
How could there be?
So you're saying there was a contract that was formed?
Oh, absolutely. There was a contract. Mr. Hardwick
knew
exactly what he was signing.
If we assume, though, the question presented, right, is lack of authority covered by the defense doctrine or not? Is that defense available or argument available notwithstanding the Dutch doctrine, right? That's the question.
That's correct.
And so my question is this. In a principal agency circumstance, how can there be a contract formation if the agent, supposed agent, in fact does not have the authority to act on behalf of the principal? Assume they don't have that authority. Okay? I'm not asking you whether this agent in fact had that authority, whether it was apparent authority, whether there was ratification. Assume the principal did not give that authority. There is no apparent authority. There's no ratification. Is that defense available?
That would not be an exception to the Dench Doctrine. Dench Why? Would still apply because a contract, we do believe a contract was formed here. We think this is strictly
How can you
about
have a contract
it's just a void
with someone.
Versus voidable question, right? I mean, that's the difference.
That's correct. This is not void. It is voidable.
How could there be a contract with someone who never authorized their agent to sign for them? How could there be a contract formed?
Well, because Mr. Hardwick knew exactly what he was signing. He wasn't fraudulently procured into signing any document. We think this case is akin to...
That's not the question. The question is, did the law firm agree to it?
Well, the law firm may or may not have agreed to it.
It's their property, right? It's their CD, right? There's no dispute about that.
The CD was created with the law firm's funds. That's correct.
Right. Yeah, so the question is whether he had the authority to pledge their property, right?
That's correct. And regardless of whether or not he had the authority, that the defense of lack of authority is barred by Dench. We think this case is squarely on point with other cases such as Bauman or Gordy, where basically parties tried to raise defenses that hinged on the truthfulness of
so
warranties to the
contract.
If somebody
steals my property and pledges it to a bank, I'm out of luck.
Well, you're out of luck if you lent yourself to an arrangement that would mislead bank examiners. That's the lesson of Bauman.
That's not the question, as I understand it, that's been presented here.
Well,
if that person lacked the authority to pledge my property, you're saying the Dench Doctrine forbids me raising that as an argument.
It forbids it because you lent yourself to an arrangement?
No,
by
it was
not
stolen
pledging.
From me. It was stolen from me.
I'm sorry, I missed that, Your Honor.
Stolen from me.
But it's defined under state law as stolen in this case, so perhaps you would have to look to state law to determine. And here, under Georgia state law, there was apparent authority, right?
Well, so I have two responses. So my first response is, Judge Pryor, the party here, the law firm, lent itself to the arrangement by not putting its governance documents in the bank's records. And the lesson of all this court's precedent, including Bauman.
They didn't know about it.
But the lesson of
I mean, all of this seems to be getting way down to issues that aren't what's actually been presented, okay? It may well be that this individual had apparent authority, okay? And the bank wins, okay? But that seems to me to be a separate question than the one that was actually granted interlocutory review, and that is a lack of authority. Let's say there's not apparent authority. There's not ratification. There's not any kind of authority. Is that a defense or an argument, notwithstanding the Dench Doctrine?
Well, I think you could answer the question presented or the question asked by the court in the affirmative and say that there is a narrow exception if the party did not do anything to lend themselves to an arrangement to mislead bank examiners. Here, however, the law firm did do something.
I don't see where that's part of the question that we granted review on, but I think we understand your argument, Mr. Okay. Shapiro.
I have one more question. How, if at all, would the FDIC's bank takeover process change if apparent authority, if we agreed with the district court's ruling here?
Well, I think there would be severe consequences. I think when bank examiners, first off, when they go into open institutions, not just failed institutions, and they assess whether or not that open institution has sufficient liquidity and capital, suddenly they go based on what the documents show. They don't question facially unambiguous documents and try to create new ambiguities.
So basically, they'd have to call up every borrower and say, did somebody have authority to sign this note? They'd have to do an investigation. They couldn't rely on the documents when you have a lack of authority. I want the record to be clear. There is no claim of forgery here. It's undisputed. The person who, the lawyer who signed the pledged this, I mean, he signed the documents. We have no forged documents in this case. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right.
Your argument would apply if the bank comes in and facially you got a document that appears to be signed by someone and in fact it's forged.
That's exactly correct. Although again, we would say that there can be an exception, a very narrow exception in certain circumstances. But what we don't want to be doing is carving out
until that case actually comes.
Or you could say that the question of forgery isn't presented here, so we wouldn't need to reach it.
That's correct.
What I might argue if I were you.
That's correct. And by the way, we also do think this can be decided under federal law. We think that's what the Georgia Supreme Court did in the federal financial case that we cited. So we don't think resort to state law is necessary.
Okay.
Here.
I think we understand your argument.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Wasserman.
May it please the court. Dench doesn't apply because Dench is a very specific doctrine. It asks the question of, are you attempting to enforce an agreement or representation not found in the bank's records? And this defense that we've asserted is not...
Let me make sure I understand something. If the bank came in and proved that the agent actually had apparent authority, that would be permissible, right?
Yes, we lose.
But that's not the question that we have before us, right?
The issue is, does Dench apply? So the question is this defense that we're presenting attempting to enforce or rely upon an agreement not found in the records of the bank?
And don't we have to look at what the records of the bank were?
Yes.
Okay. So when we look at the records of the bank, I'm not trying to suggest we go any bit outside the narrow question. We should stick with that. But the question is, normally the records of the bank prevail, correct? And you can't come up with this side agreements, oral agreements, right?
Yeah, agreements. Dench says no side agreements.
That contradict the records of the bank. You would agree with that?
Yes.
And that you would agree with this statement that our court has given receivers and in turn the successor bank a quasi-holder in due course status where the insurer purchased a note in good faith transaction. The insurer purchased this in a good faith transaction, correct?
Yes.
Without knowledge of any wrongdoing involving the note. They didn't have any knowledge of any wrongdoing involving the note.
I disagree with that.
What knowledge do they have?
Let's look at the bank's own records. A hypothecation agreement signed by Nathan Hardwick, both as the borrower and as the pledger. When an agent acts in a completely self-interested way under both Georgia law and under the restatement, he is not acting with apparent authority. He's acting in his own interest. And that's what happened here. Nathan Hardwick was acting in his own self-interest.
But we don't know that from outside the documents the bank had on their books.
We have someone acting to borrow money for himself and pledging a company asset to do that. He's acting in a self-interested way. On the face of that, he lacks apparent authority. So then they have a corporate resolution, but again, signed by Nathan Hardwick on behalf of the entity. And if you read the resolution, it doesn't actually say there's a power to pledge an asset.
But isn't the Dench Doctrine precisely designed to avoid the FDIC and the successor bank having to do a detailed investigation into various aspects of agreements that otherwise appear to be valid?
Well, that's the policy, but the requirement to apply the doctrine is, are you attempting to enforce an agreement not found in the bank record?
Right. And the question is, do you have an agreement in the first place, right? Is that an agreement that you found in their records, right?
Now, it's our position that if an examiner had come in and paid any attention to these, The problem would have been screaming to the bank examiner, I've got a self-interest transaction and no valid corporate resolution to back it up.
Why do you think it would be obvious to an examiner that a name partner of a law firm couldn't sign this particular document?
Because he's borrowing money on his own account and pledging a company asset to do it. And under the restatement and under Georgia law, that is outside apparent authority. So the apparent authority problem is in the bank documents. It's not something that's coming from outside the bank documents. It's in the bank documents. And that's why Dench doesn't apply.
But again, the question presented to us, right, is a lack of authority defense or argument available, notwithstanding Dench, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, right. And so if they want to prove that he had apparent authority or it was later ratified, they could do that.
That's right. That's what the court
denied. The only question is this actually an agreement with somebody?
That's exactly.
And it's exactly like a forgery, isn't it?
It functionally, yes. The issue is, was there ever an agreement in the first place? We have a defense as to why that's not the case. We see that defense is evident in the bank's records.
Now we get to the void versus voidable problem, which involves an analysis, which again goes back to the point that if you allow this exception in the first place, that's what introduces all these complicated issues that the Dench Doctrine is designed to avoid.
I think the void versus voidable issue is something that got touched in Langley, but it's really beside the point in Langley. The issue in Langley was, is this representation that was at issue fit within the definition of agreement such that your defense was based on an other agreement? So the issue comes back to, is this a defense relying upon an other agreement, either an agreement, a two-party agreement, or agreement as defined in Langley? And this is not a defense based on an agreement not found in the records of the bank.
And your argument is this isn't in any way dependent on any side agreement. Your argument is this isn't actually an agreement.
Right. Exactly.
But your argument would also depend upon parole evidence that he didn't have authority to do it.
You'd have to
introduce parole evidence that he didn't have authority to pledge the collateral. He pledged the collateral. He signed the pledge, right? There's no question about that. Just follow me along. He pledged the collateral.
He signed the document. It's our position that he didn't pledge it on the face of it because it was self-interested.
Okay, but I thought part of your claim was that you were going to show the law firm says he didn't have authority.
Well, when we get to the merits, yes, but again, we're back
to what's the nation. That would be parole evidence to come in to contradict the bank's records.
It's not contradicting the bank's records because the bank record on their face are inadequate.
No, you're saying the bank records aren't sufficient to show he had authority.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But they appear to give him authority.
No, they don't. They don't appear. That's precisely the point.
They appear to.
Because he...
Notwithstanding the point that you raised about his self-interest and self-dealing, okay?
Well...
If you just read the documents, do they purport to give him...
No, because if you look at the corporate resolution, there's no... You can read it. Mm-hmm. It's not filled out properly, and none of the powers that could possibly...
I thought it gave him powers to handle all... I know it doesn't say pledge collateral, but gives him powers to handle all accounts of the law firm.
Not this one. Not document...
Another document. No. Is there another document that's not a document that says you...
This is 74-4 in the record. It's the only corporate resolution relevant that's at issue in this case. And nothing in it says anything about... I mean, they haven't even checked the box on
none of the boxes are checked, right?
None of them are checked. I mean, there's...
Is that the corporate document, or is that a document that the bank had?
This was a doc. This is the bank's... This is in from the bank's records. This is from their loan.
That's the purported corporate resolution in the bank's records, right?
The bank's own witness testified that this is the wrong one. This is, if you're going to pledge a collateral, this isn't the one you use. I mean, that's our point. This is not enforcing some other agreement, some other representation. Mm-hmm. We're saying the problem is in the bank's documents. And so Dench just doesn't apply because we're not trying to enforce another representation, another agreement. And then so we should just go back to the district court. The court denied both motions for summary judgment on authority. Let's just go back and try the issue of apparent authority. I think that's all I need to say. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Wow, thanks for the 6 minutes.
Well, there's a there are two separate agreements in the records of the bank, right?
Right.
There's one pledging the CD as collateral.
Right.
And then there's the resolution. And you have both of them there?
Yes, Judge.
Can we just see them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure. You want to approach the bench, if you will.
You want both of them?
I don't know. Do you want both of them, Judge Wilk?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have any more questions. I just want to
take a look at them
before we confer.
Well,
Your Honor can have them.
He probably would like to entertain any questions you might have after looking at them. Give you a few minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, this is what I thought it said. Depository accounts. It gave him authority to handle their depository accounts.
But it didn't.
Name counts, endorse for negotiation, receive the proceeds, check draft, make withdrawals, transfer funds.
Two points. First, none of that is about pledging it as security. Second, I'm sorry.
But this, I thought you said it didn't give him authority to handle all the accounts in the bank. I know it never says the magic words and pledge one of our accounts. A CD is an account at the bank, right?
Yes.
All right. I agree this document does not say authority to pledge a CD for the loan. There's no doubt about that. We wouldn't be here if this document said that.
But
this document gives him full authority, this resolution by the law firm, to handle all the accounts, the bank accounts of the law firm.
Two problems.
What are they?
One, he gave the authority to himself. He signed it on behalf of the entity. How can he purport to act to the entity to give himself authority?
Right. Outside the self-interest dealing. What's the second point?
If you look at the top, it says something like, the powers in effect are the one. If there's a box in front of the line, the powers are given if the box is checked. And the box isn't checked.
The handling of the accounts is a separate box and the box isn't checked?
Yes. I think I actually have a marker up there at the top.
The green marker?
Yes. Mm-hmm. If you read that line, and it says, whatever you're doing, check the box. And nobody checked any boxes.
What pages of your brief are these documents referenced, or this particular document referenced on?
I have a little time, I guess. Let me
take as much time as you need.
In the facts section, we discussed the document at pages 4 through 7. Actually, the box is being checked goes over onto 7 and 8. So it's really 4 through 8.
Because what I'm hearing right now is a different argument than what I understood you to say in your brief. The brief seemed to me to focus on the fact that if you looked at the corporate agreements that the bank didn't have, then you would realize that his authority wasn't proper.
Yeah.
Whereas it seems that you're saying now, in accordance with the usual rules of Dench, the bank had documents that showed that this agreement wasn't valid. You're not looking for a rule about Dench. You are saying today that what happened here was simply a miss in the ordinary application of Dench because the documents of the bank already demonstrated that this particular instrument was invalid.
We're saying that our argument here about apparent authority is not relying upon an agreement or representation outside the records of the bank.
Yeah, you say on page 24 of your brief, here's your heading, the resolution on its face did not authorize Hardwick to act as agent for MHS to pledge the MHS CD. That was your argument,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I mean, because so it doesn't on its face say pledge the CD. You didn't argue anything about, oh, because there's a box about him to opening the bank accounts. You never argued anything about a box.
Look on page seven of our brief in bold type, but none of the boxes are checked. We discussed that at some length.
Anything else?
So do you have the hypothecation agreement? This is the resolution.
Yes.
Do you have it here?
There is two documents, a resolution.
Okay.
I'm looking at page 26. There's the testimony too. Are any of those boxes checked? They are not.
Oh, I see. It's on the back. Okay, I got it.
Does that indicate you none of the phrases have been selected as part of the resolution? Answer: yes. You have a couple pages of actual testimony quoted verbatim in block quotes in your red brief, don't you?
Yes.
Okay, let me ask you this. On the back of the one depository account, there is a check box, and it says specific accounts, account number 555-29696, and that is checked, and as I understand that, that was the law firm's general bank account.
Well, that was the CD that was pledged.
Oh, so the one thing that's checked here, that the account he's entitled to do, is on the back, and that's the CD. That's the one box that's checked as to the bank account.
To identify the bank account, yes.
Yes, that gives him authorization to act for.
No, he doesn't, because none of the boxes on the front are checked, which define the powers.
Right. Let's see.
Resolution applies to check. All the resolution applies to specific accounts, and they here. I think we can look at it.
We can.
I'll close the box that's checked refers specifically to the CD.
Well, they're looking at the document. Here's a question. It sounds like you are saying. You're saying not this should be an exception to the Dench Doctrine, but you are saying if the bank, for instance, in the traditional sense where someone alleged, oh, there's a secret side agreement, and you say, no, the bank actually had the record of the agreement. That's not an exception to Dench. That's just an application of Dench. Right? So you're not asking for, for this argument, you're not asking for an exception. You're arguing that applying Dench would lead to the result that you're seeking.
Yes. Dench doesn't apply to this type of defense.
But not because there's an exception, just because there are records that on their face demonstrate that this instrument wasn't valid.
Yes.
Yeah, so I want to go back to this resolution. So it's resolved that the following described officers, members, managers, partners, employees, designated parties, or agents of the entity referred to below as authorized parties whose names and signatures appear below are authorized for and on behalf of the entity to have the following indicated powers as contained in this resolution. And then none of the boxes are checked.
Exactly.
Depository account, safe deposit box, depository lockbox, debt card, item card, cash management, other authority.
Yes.
Then it says further, this resolution continues on page 2 of this document, and all of the power and authority granted are incorporated in this resolution. The problem being none of the boxes are checked and none has been granted,
exactly.
Right? And then it says the resolution applies to this account, the CD. But the problem is that the powers and authority granted as it being incorporated, there are none checked, right?
Exactly.
And there was no, as I understood the deposition, the testimony here, there's actually no dispute about that, right? That on its face, that's a problem, right?
That's exactly the problem.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Kohler, you have 3 minutes.
Y'all want to address your question about what's before the court. Before the court is whether or not the purported lack of authority to do so. It doesn't talk about apparent authority or right. actual authority. It right. says authority. You asked me earlier.
Is a lack of authority a defense or argument that the Dench Doctrine covers and bars, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And that's a yes or no.
That's correct.
And if, you know, look, if the bank can prove that, in fact, the individual had apparent authority, that would be fine. That would mean, though, the Dench Doctrine doesn't have anything to do with it. They could prove there actually was authority.
You asked me earlier about my authority that the court can look at the district court's summary judgment order. We cited in page 15 of our brief, we cited to the 11th Circuit, the Mormon case, and we also cited to Yamaha, the Supreme Court case in our brief that gives this court authority to look at the issues raised in the Judge Story's district court order. Your Honor, also, the idea that a conflicted transaction like this is somehow an exception or not governed by Dench is just wrong. The only way you can determine whether a transaction is...
Okay, let's go to the documents. I don't think anybody's persuaded by the self-interest part. It goes to the documents.
Yes.
So go to his argument about the documents. Why do the documents on the face of the bank to the bank examiner show the validity of the loan, and nobody would have reason to... It would appear to a holder in due course, I have to go back to the language, you know, that there was a valid pledge of the CD here.
Yes, Your Honor. I would first, you look at the assignment agreement. On its face, the assignment agreement has him signing as a purported agent of the law firm. That's good enough for the assignment. Look at the hypothecation agreement. It's having him sign in his representative capacity. It doesn't say that this particular instrument will only be valid if it's signed by Mr. Harwick in his representative capacity and the condition that there is an express authorization for him to do so. If you look at the resolution, we admit that the box is not checked.
Problem, isn't it?
I don't know, Your Honor. It's not, because certain irregularities with documents is not it does not escape.
Here's the bank's corporate representative's testimony.
But the
question is: there anything in the resolution that expressly authorizes either Mr. Hardwick or Mr. Driscoll to pledge the CD as collateral? I don't see that.
That's correct, Your Honor. But Dench prohibits this court to do exactly what you did.
Yeah. That's your argument. Your argument is, even when we look at the documents and they don't give you the authority, we can't consider that.
Your Honor, also, when you look at the document, if you look out next to each number.
So that's different. You know, as I understood it, the point of the Dench Doctrine was you're not supposed to look outside those documents. Look at the document. The document doesn't do it.
Your Honor, the resolution, if you look at the resolution, next to number four, it says Harwick can transfer the funds. Next to it, it identifies the two people who can do so, Mr. Driscoll and Mr. Hardwick. Out on the side there, it identifies the individuals who can perform those acts. But this isn't necessary. This is not necessary under Georgia law when he's clothed with apparent authority and he signed.
That's a different question than the one we granted review, as I understand it. Whether he had apparent authority, you know, the district court can consider that. You know, we can consider an appeal from a final judgment about that. But as I understood it, the question is lack of authority an argument or a defense that you can make, or does the Dench Doctrine bar that? And when you come back and say, well, you had apparent authority, we're no longer arguing about whether the Dench Doctrine bars a lack of authority defense. What we're arguing about is whether you, in fact, had the authority.
And they don't
have a problem with that.
And, Your Honor, even when answering that question, even if the resolution, it doesn't prohibit him from from doing this. It doesn't prohibit him from transferring the CD.
Actually, you just look at the hypothecation agreement. That says, I hereby pledge it. I have authority to do so. I pledge it. So the resolution was being used, as I understood it, in the district court to corroborate or to bolster the fact, because it doesn't say you have authority to pledge.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. It was just used. He has some authority to deal with accounts. It doesn't say pledge. He has some authority to deal with the law firm's money. That's all that's doing. So you would say the hypothecation agreement standing alone is sufficient to show that there was a valid transaction.
Exactly.
And the resolution was offered to further show he had authority to deal with accounts, because the resolution itself doesn't pledge the CD.
And I'd also refer the court to the assignment as well, which is another standalone document that on its face.
Where is the assignment in the record? Because I need to look at it. I haven't focused on that one.
It's document number 77-9. I have a copy of it if you need it. But, Your Honor, I would end in this.
So we can see Can I get it from him?
Yeah, sure.
Do you have it right there?
Yes, Your Honor. May I approach?
I mean, I do think it's looking at the records as whether a bank examiner would think there's looks like a valid transaction that would be put on notice. Something's amiss here.
How long does this process typically take?
So, are you talking about with respect to the closing of a failed bank? So typically on a Friday, after the bank closes, the FDIC comes in, does a quick assessment of the books and the records. It solicits bids to healthy banks, trying to entice them to come in and take over. Ideally, there's a purchase assumption agreement entered in with the healthy bank. And so by 9 o'clock the next day or the next business day on Monday, they're up and running. So that depositor will have access to his money on Saturday or Monday, whatever the next banking day is. If the FDIC goes to the healthy banks and say, look, we believe that the assets and liabilities of this bank are X, but we don't know because there's things that may have been signed by people without authority to do so, I have a lot of concern that a healthy bank like Renaissance Bank will step in. And if that doesn't happen, that depositor is not having access to his funds on Saturday or Monday. And in fact, when he finally gets access to his funds, it may only be capped at the whatever's insured. But, Your Honor, I'll leave it at this.
Yeah, so part of your argument, and as I understand how this works, is that you look at the face of the document. Facially, it looks like he's pledged it. I just read the assignment, which does help. The deposit agreement may not be totally filled out on everything, but it does refer to the CD, and he's pledged it, and then you've got the assignment. So anybody would think this is okay. You have to go outside these documents and say he has. What we're trying to do is prove an inverse, I guess. He lacked authority. So you'd have to go outside the bank documents to say he lacked authority to do any of this. That's really what it is.
And that's what Dench abhors, which is having to go outside the bank records. But even if this corporate resolution document casts doubt about the
reason for having the corporate resolution in the first place.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Why would the bank have the corporate resolution in the first place? To show that this individual actually has the authority, right?
Well, the court, yes.
I mean, that's why you would have it, right? And if you look at it on its face and it doesn't grant him the authority, you say it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It could be stolen. Doesn't matter.
But under the law, Your Honor, that resolution is not required, and it doesn't prohibit him. It doesn't say he can't transfer the CD. And so when you look at the assignment hypothecation, it did grant a permission. But the final point on this, if the resolution gives the court heartburn, at most, it renders this transaction voidable, which the Supreme Court in Langley said you can still transfer, you can still enforce the assignments and the hypothecation with respect to the CD.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
Thank you. We have your case. We'll move to the last one of the day, Huggins versus